on that excursion.
Your father, you call him Mr. Charles?
Yes. Yes.
And your grandfather, Monroe, Louisiana.
Right.
And in 1967, your grandfather came to his first
professional basketball
pro game to see you play.
Basketball game?
Yes.
He didn't understand the game, I don't think. It never concerned him. He knew that
I don't understand. But go ahead. No, I'm kidding. You just lost your mic here. But anyway, tell me now. It's easier. What was your grandfather's reaction to being there? There he is sitting in the stands, his first game.
Well, he, first of all, not understand the game. All these big guys run up and down. But I was coaching, and to see me giving orders. You see, you have to remember that, if you will, my grandfather was, his folks were born slaves. And so his early childhood, all of his points of references was slave mentality. And so, and slavery in this country was based on race. So then he comes in his last years, he's about 90 years old, and he sees me giving orders.
To white people?
Yeah, and so he asked my father, did everybody have to do what I said? And he said, of course, he's the coach. He said, the white boys too? He said, yeah, all of them. And so it took him a while to go those 90 years. See the differences. And then after the game, we were trying to get out of the place as, you know, as professionals, and there was, the facilities weren't that great, so there's only one shower. And so one guy would go in and get the guy would soap up and just try to get out of there. And he saw this, and it made him cry, because he said he, from the time that as a child, he never thought he'd see a day when blacks and white would get together that, and get along that well, on a thing of mutual understanding, because he could see that. It wasn't, it was a horizontal relationship. Everybody's on the same level.
You, as you said, were not a basketball player. You're a man first.
Mm-hmm.
As you every day get up and look at your own life and what you want to do with it, what will make you, if it's possible, ultimately happy?
I am happy.
Are you now?
Yes.
How can you say that as glibly and as easily as that when most people can't?
That's just the way I feel. You know, I think that I exercise a great deal of the freedom that the Constitution provides. Mm. Sometimes you get a hassle for that, but that just makes it interesting. I'm happy with the work that I do, because the job itself is not that important, what it is. Is that if I take a job, and then the thrill is to see what the best I can be at it. Yeah. In other words, if I go into television, I don't have to be Walter Cronkite. Just to find out, I want to find out what my limits are.
Yeah.
And so as long as I do the best that I can, I'm at peace with myself. And my life is very good.
Right now.
It has been. The only thing... Only year I can think of being better than this year is maybe next year.
Oh, great. Second Wind is a book that Bill Russell has just written. It's about his own life and his own second wind. And I think you'll be excited to read it. Maybe not every word, but most of it, certainly.
Well, if you read it, you'll read anything. But
thank you.
Dr. Bach, Senator Hatfield, fellow participants in this town meeting. As Jack noted, I came to my new career after some 19 years as a journalist, a career which convinced me that as a general proposition, a public official could be depended upon to lie, and a newspaper could be counted upon to print that lie with virtually no thought of the necessity for undoing it in the transmission, i.e., the medium that I served was one of the great transmission belts encouraging lying, because demagogue or savior both got the same amount of space, the same uncritical attention, trapped as we were as journalists in a form about which we seemed to learn nothing from year to year. I came to this job in a Washington beset with post-Watergate self-appraisal, and I would hope morality, come to serve a president who did indeed promise not to lie, come to a job in which I promised repeatedly that I would not lie, and have found that while it is true and possible that you shall not lie, it does not follow that you will always tell the truth, and the two must be distinguished. Because it is possible in this public world to so use the facts that truth is not the result, while lying is not the device. But having said that, I want to say something about context, something about the reality of today as opposed to our appraisal of it. I would suggest to you that the reality is there is not more lying in public places today than in the past, but less. I would suggest to you that for very good and sufficient reasons, public officials find it, as a matter of pragmatism as well as morality, a proper course to follow that they do not lie. And the simplest explanation for it is precisely the fact that few lies in 1979 America will not be found out. That there is no organic whole which can contain the lie of the public official for long. There is no longer the kind of bonding in leadership or other circles in this country which gathers around the liar and the lie and encompasses it and perpetrates it and perpetuates it as the official truth. Now, that's another way of saying that a great deal of the discipline in the system is gone. But in this case, that lack of discipline works on behalf, I think, of the general public. It also acts as a tremendous goad to conscience for the public official. I, for one, am fully aware that if I go out in front of my daily auditors at the noon briefing at the State Department with what is a lie, I do not expect that I could survive 24 hours without it being so revealed. Thus, I would just suggest to you that in a Washington whose reporters as well as politicians like to forget that the phrase managing the news didn't come out of the last decade, that came out of the Kennedy administration. In a Washington that forgets that lying was a consistent pattern for public leaders in this country, once you got past the myths of the history books we all read in eighth and ninth grade, for more years than you would want to think, and realize that today, unlike the 15 years ago, or the 10 years ago, or even the 5 years ago, it is almost impossible to commit the public lie and get away with it. And so it's been relatively easy for me to keep to my conscience and to keep to my vow and not lie. I thank God for that. But I would suggest to you that it is equally easy to keep that vow now and necessary to do it, because it is extraordinarily difficult to evade the responsibility and to evade being caught out if you do it. I want to say one final thing. I did come to this job from the other side of the tracks, from 19 years in journalism. And as I said, it was my certainty that most public officials lie. I have to tell you, after 2 years and 9 months, it is my certainty that most don't. And that most, in fact, no matter what the general feeling is in the country at large, or the attitude, the lack of trust that Dr. Bach spoke of, that lack of trust is as ill-founded as was the blind belief that our leaders were all truthful a decade or two decades ago. In fact, most are, most of the time. And in some ways, the public is better served than the public demands. Thank you.